In the first part of this program, I'm going to introduce you to the concept of pH and how we measure it. Then, in the second part, I shall deal with the more sophisticated aspects of how to set up standard solutions for the calibration of pH meter assemblies. The concept of the important quantity pH, an indicator of the acidity or alkalinity of a sample solution, was introduced by the Dane Sorensen in 1909 as the negative logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration or molarity. Have a look at frame 1. The idea was to avoid cumbersome exponents like 10 to the minus 3 and to provide a simple scale of positive numbers going from naught upwards as the solution becomes less and less acidic. Actually, one can have solutions with pH less than 0, negative, if we go to stronger solutions of the mineral acids than 1 mole per litre in concentration. You will see in frame 1 that one should write the relation between pH and concentration actually as a ratio of concentrations, since one cannot take a logarithm of a dimensional quantity. Frame 1 also points out that pH does not have units. Although you may find books which refer to pH units, this is misleading and wrong. Sorensen's approach was fine until it was realized a few years later that ions in solution, such as the hydrogen ion, do not exert their full effects because they interact with one another and with their associated anions. This effective concentration is expressed by the concept of activity, first introduced by G.N. Lewis. If you have not heard of this, or even if you have, you may find the following analogy helpful. Imagine that you are alone in a room empty of people, chairs and tables, and the fire alarm sounds. Your ability to escape from the room is unimpeded, and one can say your ability to escape, on a relative scale of 0 to 1, is 1. Now imagine that the room is crowded with people. Your escape is much more difficult because people get in your way. Your activity, like that of the iron, is less than 1 on this relative scale. Refer to frame 1 again and you will see how Sorensen modified his definition in terms of the ion activity of the hydrogen ion. But that brings with it another problem because we cannot measure a single ion activity, only activity of ions in neutral combinations. The reason we cannot is because we cannot obtain a beaker of hydrogen ion, or any other ion for that matter, without the simultaneous presence of oppositely charged ions to balance the charge. The combination has to be electrically neutral. The last part of frame 1 explains why the measured pH range extends from 0, acid, to approximately 14, alkaline, for a 1 molar solution of, say, sodium hydroxide. The reason is that the ionic product of water, the equilibrium constant for the dissociation of water into hydrogen and hydroxide ions, is 10 to the minus 14 at 25 degrees centigrade. As well as getting negative pHs in very concentrated solutions of acid, if we go to higher concentrations of hydroxide, we will get values approaching 15. The reason I said that pH of a 1 molar solution of sodium hydroxide is approximately 14 is that the activity deviates more and more from the relative concentration as the concentration of the solution is increased and the ions have to pack in more tightly together. This is true not only if we add more hydroxide, but also if we add a salt such as sodium chloride. Neutrality is the condition when we have equal concentrations of hydrogen and hydroxide ions. This is pH 7 at 25 degrees centigrade, but deviates from this at other temperatures because the ionic product is strongly temperature dependent. Hence the length of the measured pH range, the pH scale, shortens as the temperature increases. pH, defined in terms of activity of hydrogen ion, is called a notional definition because of the fact that a single ion quantity is not measurable. In other words, we've not got very far, from a practical point of view, in making this definition unless we can find some way of measuring the immeasurable. The first time you met the concept of acidity was probably when you used universal indicator paper or litmus paper to determine whether certain substances were acids or bases or neutral. If you need to revise your ideas on acids and bases, there are some notes to help you in Appendix 1. In indicator paper, the coloured acid or base form of a dye changes colour when introduced to an acid or basic solution. This can be used for pH measurement, but what Sorensen had in mind was an electrochemical cell, an electrometric method of measuring pH based on the hydrogen gas electrode. The cell scheme for this cell, cell 1, is shown at the top of frame 2. On the right, we have the hydrogen gas electrode, which responds to hydrogen ion in a solution, in this case called X, the unknown test or sample solution. The assembly on the left is the mercury-1 chloride, or calomel electrode, placed in concentrated potassium chloride solution, which forms a liquid-liquid junction, denoted by double vertical bars, with X. Across it, a potential difference develops called the liquid junction potential, Ej. The next few lines of frame 2 show how we derive an equation for the relation between the measured potential difference, E, of the cell 1 and pH, by applying the well-known Nernst equation. However, we still have a difficulty because the relation, equation 2, requires the standard potential to be evaluated. This is a problem because the standard potential is not constant, but changes with change of X, because Ej varies with X, as we shall see later. The alternative approach of comparing X with a standard solution S of assigned pH, pHs, is adopted instead. So, essentially, we are measuring the potential difference of the double cell, cell 2. If the liquid junction potential of X against potassium chloride is the same as that of S against potassium chloride, the last term of equation 3 of frame 2, called the residual liquid junction potential, is zero. Then we can calculate the pH of X, pHx, from pHs and the potential difference of cell 2. Any error in the assumption that the residual liquid junction potential is zero is included in pHx. I shall return to this point on part 2, and I will explain then how we assign pHs values to certain standard solutions. Cell 2 is called the operational cell because pH is defined in terms of the operation or procedure of making the measurement. In practice, it is inconvenient to use a hydrogen gas electrode since we need to bubble hydrogen gas through each of the solutions X and S. This can cause problems. So we normally use the much more practical glass membrane electrode, which also responds to hydrogen ions in solution. It is often referred to as the pH glass electrode. It simply replaces the hydrogen gas electrode in cells 1 and 2. The fact that the potential difference across a glass membrane depends on the hydrogen ion concentration on either side of it was discovered early this century by Kramer and followed up by Clemensiewicz, a student working with Fritz Haber of the Haber ammonia process. See frame 3. It was difficult in those days to measure the potential difference across the membrane, which has a high electrical resistance. Pioneering work was done at the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research in New York by Duncan McInnes and Malcolm Dole on the formulation of electrode glass compositions, which led to the first commercial pH meter of Arnold Beckmann based on vacuum tube electronics. Improvements were made in the composition of electrode glasses using lithium instead of sodium and other additions by Purley of the Leeds Northrop Company, also in USA. See frame 3. To make a glass electrode, a thin glass bulb is blown on the end of a thicker lead glass tube, but in doing so, the composition of the glass on the outer surface of the bulb becomes different from that on the inside. Also, the inside is stressed differently from the outside. These factors lead to what is known as the asymmetry potential. The existence of the asymmetry potential can be demonstrated by placing identical solutions and reference electrodes on each side of the membrane. Then the potential difference of the cell is found not to be zero. This asymmetry potential can vary both with the time the glass is in contact with the solution and also with the type of the solution. So we get a variable zero error, which makes it necessary to calibrate the glass electrode cell frequently. The form of a commercial glass electrode is shown in frame 4. It is necessary to condition a glass electrode after the bulb is blown and before it is put into use. Usually, the manufacturer suggests that this is done by soaking it in 0.1 mole per litre HCl for 24 hours. But often it is supplied with a rubber cap over the bulb already filled with conditioning solution. Basically, the glass electrode behaves just like a hydrogen gas electrode, except in strong acid or strong alkali solution, where it shows errors which depend in extent on the electrode glass composition chosen. These errors are shown in frame 3. They are due to the penetration of anions or alkali metal cations into the outer surface of the glass, called the gel layer. This is a layer swollen with water during conditioning. During this conditioning process, ion exchange has occurred, and the alkali metal ions originally in the glass on its surface are replaced by hydrogen ions. So the essential functional groups on the surface are SiOH, silanol groups. What happens at the surface of a new glass electrode in contact with various solutions can be demonstrated elegantly by a technique known as argon iron beam etching. When a beam of argon ions in a near vacuum is directed at a glass surface, the surface layers are etched and emit photons characteristic of the glass components. One sees the characteristic flame spectra of sodium, lithium, calcium, etc., and hence can obtain the changes in composition from the intensity change as the argon ions etch or sputter away the surface. Such concentration profiles are shown in frame 5. A lithium-calcium-silicate glass was conditioned in 0.1 mol per litre sulfuric acid, and the lithium and calcium profiles were determined, curves A and B. You'll see from curve B that the gel layer depth is about 50 nanometers, if it is the removal of calcium which defines it, or 5 times this if lithium removal, curve A, is considered. One can also see the hydrogen spectra from hydrogen ion and water combined. The longer the sample is in the vacuum, the more water is removed, so there are two curves shown, C and D, corresponding to straightaway and 1 hour pumping. Curve C levels out, which may be due to the residual water in the glass, or more likely that hydrogen ions are being driven through the glass by action of the argon iron beam. One cannot study the system without perturbing it. Most interesting, though, is the effect of putting another, conditioned piece of glass into sodium hydroxide solution for 24 hours. If this is sputtered, we find that sodium ions have penetrated into the glass. This entry of sodium ions leads to the so-called alkaline or sodium error. Some results for the sodium errors of a particular glass electrode are shown in frame 6. The extent of the error depends on pH, the sodium concentration, the glass composition, and to some extent on the age of the glass electrode. The older it is, the thicker the gel layer is usually. The actual thickness depends on the relative rates of penetration of water and ion exchange into the glass, and the rate of dissolution of the outer surface into the solution. Today, most glass electrodes have improved glass compositions over that of the glass electrode that gave the results of frame 6, and do not show such large errors. It is now possible to obtain commercial electrodes with quite small errors in 0.1 mol per litre sodium hydroxide. Let us now turn to the reference electrode of the operational cell 1 of frame 2. Look at frame 7. Although a calomel electrode is shown there, alternatives are often used, principally the silver-silver chloride electrode, especially in USA. Since the solubility of silver chloride in potassium chloride is greater than that of calomel, it is necessary to saturate the solution with silver chloride, otherwise the small amount usually plated onto the silver dissolves. The thalamide, thallium amalgam thallium 1 chloride system, was introduced by the German firm of Schott. This has the advantage that it does not show the thermal hysteresis which is displayed by the calomel or silver-silver chloride electrodes. If you raise the temperature and then lower it again, thermal hysteresis results from the delay in re-establishing equilibrium with the solution at the lower temperature. The Ross electrode, named after Jim Ross of the Orion Company of Cambridge, Massachusetts, does not use a solubility equilibrium, but is an iodine-iodide redox electrode, and so is entirely free of the hysteresis problem. The design of the reference electrode, in particular the method of forming the liquid junction, is very important for precise measurements. If potassium chloride leaks into the sample, contaminating it, then the measured potential difference of the cell will change. On the other hand, water, or the sample, entering the reference electrode can lead to changes of liquid junction potential, or of E0, if substances such as sulfide ions penetrate as far as the metal-iron interface. However, the path usually is obstructed, so it is difficult for the ions to penetrate that far. The requirements for good, stable liquid junctions are listed in Frame 8. Common methods of forming the liquid junction are shown in Frame 9. Commonest is the ceramic frit or porous plug type of constrained junction, where a short length of porous ceramic is sealed into the end of a glass tube. Alternatively, it can be sealed into the side of the tube or the tube bent to give the J-shaped junction named after the Swede Wilhelm Forslind. The idea here is to put the higher density potassium chloride solution below the less dense solution X or S, so providing gravitational stability and the solutions do not mix by convection. It is possible to observe, making use of the refractive index difference between the solutions, the potassium chloride leaking from the porous plug junctions. It can pour out of the end sealed one, just like water out of a tap. Even with the J junction, it spills over and runs down the outside of the tube. The ground sleeve types of junction, male or female, have the advantage they can be separated and flushed or cleaned. Porous plug junctions tend to suffer from memory effects, that is, drifting potentials due to the ions from a previous solution remaining in the ceramic plug, sometimes precipitating out there. The best method of forming a junction is within a narrow 0.5 to 1 mm capillary tube. This is the free diffusion junction, theoretically preferable, and so-called because the solutions freely and naturally interdiffuse from an initially sharp junction. It has to be reformed with each new solution and therefore is not suitable for routine measurements. Almost as good is the flowing junction, characterized by a thin and constant diffusion layer thickness, unlike the free diffusion layer, where the thickness increases steadily with time but without any consequent change in liquid junction potential. Since the layer tends to be formed a little down the stem of the T, the flowing junction, together with the free diffusion junction, meets the criteria 1 to 3 of Frame 8. Some manufacturers recommend putting a hydrostatic head of pressure on potassium chloride so that it flows out of the constraining plug. This may be all right if the volume of the sample is large, so that contamination is minimized, or the sample is flowed. The design of a commercial porous plug calomel reference electrode is shown in Frame 10. The cotton wool plug serves the dual purpose of keeping the calomel mercury in inverted position and restricts diffusion of ions from the sample. Some manufacturers use a gel such as methyl cellulose or agar to slow down ion transport by convection and to stop leakage of potassium chloride into the sample. The reference electrode and the glass electrode can be combined into a single probe, a combination or dual electrode, as shown in Frame 11. Note that the plug of the reference electrode is in the side, so if potassium chloride leaks from this, it runs down over the surface of the glass membrane, changing the concentration there. Both this type and a single reference electrode usually have a hole for topping up the potassium chloride. For those electrodes where flow is designed to be fast, it is recommended the hole is uncovered from the piece of rubber sleeving, which usually covers it. Frame 12 shows the glass electrode production facility of one of the principal UK manufacturers, Russell PH, at Auchtermuchty in Scotland. Now we have looked at detail at the features of the operational cell, let us see what we need to measure its potential difference. Frame 13 lists the requirements of a pH meter. It is first and foremost a high-impedance voltmeter, which has the facility for converting millivolts into pH by dividing by the slope factor K at the appropriate temperature. Look again at frame 2 if you've forgotten what the slope factor is. The potential difference of the operational cell can vary over plus or minus 2 volts, and the electrical impedance, resistance, of the glass membrane can be as high as 500 megohms at room temperature, increasing as the temperature decreases. The pH meter may have an analog output, that is a needle moving over a dial, or more likely a digital output to 2 or 3 decimal places. There is often a facility for attaching a YT recorder so that a change with time of pH can be followed. An output is sometimes provided for the input of the readings into a microcomputer. There is even a plug-in pH board available for IBM PC and compatibles and Apple computers, which converts them to sophisticated pH meters. At first sight, the controls on a pH meter can appear daunting, particularly if you've not read the handbook. This is often because different names are used for the same function. Frame 14 attempts to simplify things by listing the various names that appear on different makes of pH meter and explaining what each does. Basically, there are 4 functions. First of all, by use of a standard solution S, the pH meter is calibrated by adjusting the set buffer adjustment control to read the assigned pHs of the standard buffer at the appropriate temperature of the solution. The pHx of the test solution, providing it is at the same temperature, can then be read when it has been substituted for the standard solution. Don't forget to rinse first the electrodes with the new solution or water. Drying with tissue is not recommended, as it can introduce electrostatic charge into the system and you have to wait for it to decay away. The pHx is only correct if before you started you set the second control listed in frame 14, the slope temperature factor adjustment control, to the temperature of the 2 solutions. This procedure ensures that the correct value of the slope factor is used. We will consider in a moment what to do if the 2 solution temperatures are different. If you calibrate with more than one standard buffer, you can find out whether the glass reference electrode pair is actually showing the theoretical or Nernstian slope factor. If it is not, there is a third control, the slope factor adjustment control, usually marked as a percentage between 100% and 95%, which you can adjust to pHs of the second standard buffer. Any value lower than 95% would indicate something seriously wrong with the electrodes or with the solutions, as indeed would values much greater than 100%. It actually has the same function in the electronics as the slope temperature factor adjustment. The fourth control is labelled isopotential and is much more difficult to understand. We will defer consideration of it for the moment. Look at frame 15, which shows a basic analog pH meter, and see if you can identify the various controls I have mentioned. Do the same with the more advanced analog instrument of frame 16 and the digital one of frame 17. The digital pH meter has touch-sensitive controls and a numeric keypad for input of pHs values. Next time you see a pH meter in the laboratory, do the same for that. Most pH meters have facilities for temperature compensation. These are described in frame 18. Setting manually the slope temperature factor converts millivolts to pH, as I've said. It has to be set carefully, because an error of 1 degree can cause an error as much as 0.01 in pH. However, most slope temperature factor knobs on pH meters are not scaled very accurately. Alternatively, this procedure can be carried out automatically if you have a number of samples to measure of slightly varying temperature of a few degrees by using a platinum or nickel resistance thermometer in the solution. This automatic temperature compensator may not be swapped between pH meters as it has to be closely matched. Now let us go back to isopotential, which was listed as the fourth item in frame 14. You can skip this section on first hearing if you like. We identify two different cases. Firstly, the standard and sample solution are at different temperatures. Secondly, and in addition to this, the reference electrode is remote and at a different temperature to the sample. Hence, there is a thermal gradient within the operational cell. Both of these situations should be avoided, if at all possible, if you want precise measurements. We assume that the term E0 dash is a linear function of temperature. This is a good approximation if the temperature difference is only 10 to 20 degrees. Frame 18 shows that the measured E does not then depend on temperature at a certain pH called the isopotential pH, PHI. This PHI relates to a particular glass reference electrode pair and its type of internal and external reference electrode elements and filling solutions. It is possible to make a correction for the variation of E0 dash with temperature by dialing in, on the isopotential control, the appropriate isopotential value. This value will be different for the two cases of frame 18, 3A and 3B. If a pH meter does not have an isopotential control, it can be assumed that it's set in the instrument to 7. Isopotential correction and slope factor correction are only two aspects of full temperature correction. For full temperature compensation, one has to take into account the variation of the hydrogen ion activity of the solution with temperature. This is more difficult and is only known for certain solutions, and not for all the possible sample solutions, of course. The isopotential should not be confused with the zero point of the electrode, which is the value of pH for which the potential difference of the cell is zero at 25 degrees centigrade. The zero point can be changed by changing the filling solution or the inner reference electrode type. Colloquially, the zero point is sometimes called the E0, which risks confusion with the E0 in frame 2. Turning now to standard buffers, frame 19 gives PHS values for three buffers in common use. I will go into more detail about the choice of standard buffers and how values of pH are assigned in part 2 of this program. In the meantime, let us look at the chemistry. Potassium hydrogen phthalate is the most commonly used one-substance standard buffer with a pH of about 4. In solution, the half-salt dissociates to give hydrogen ions, singly charged hydrogen phthalate ions, and doubly charged phthalate ions. Likewise, borax, disodium tetraborate, dissociates to give orthoboric acid and its conjugate base form, giving a pH of about 9. The situation may be a little bit more complicated than this because of polyborate formation. The other buffer is the two-component phosphate buffer with pH about 7. Frame 20A reviews the equations defining the three acid dissociation constants of the triprotic phosphoric acid. There is the possibility, depending on pH, of the existence of the monohydrogen phosphate ion, the dihydrogen phosphate ion, and the triply charged phosphate ion in solution. From the total phosphate concentration and the three constants, one can work out the fractions of each ion that exist at different pH values, and hence the species distribution diagram of frame 20B. Note the points where the sigmoid curves cross at alpha equal to 0.5, corresponding to the values of the three Ks. The phosphate buffer at pH 7 has equal amounts of mono and dihydrogen phosphate ions, and hence its pH should be equal to pK2. See the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation of Appendix 1 if you do not know why this is so. That the pH is not quite equal to pK2 is due to the finite concentration of the solution and activity effect. Frame 20C shows a pH titration curve of phosphoric acid with sodium hydroxide. The pK1 and pK2 can be determined from the horizontal inflections of this titration curve. It is harder to get pK3 accurately because the titration curve does not extend far enough with 0.1 mole per litre sodium hydroxide, and the glass electrode begins to show alkaline errors at such high pH values. Slightly less complicated looking species distribution curves could be drawn for orthophthalic acid and orthoboric acids. To conclude the first part of this program, let us consider the choice of standard solutions for pH. Appendices 2 and 3 list pH values for more solutions and are given for reference. If pH is required only to plus or minus 0.05, then it really does not matter which standard solution you choose. If, however, pH is required to plus or minus 0.002, and one really cannot expect to get any better than that, then the standard buffer should be chosen which is closest to the sample as possible in pH, concentration, and composition. This is in order that the residual liquid junction potential term, see frame 2, equation 3, shall be as small as possible and effectively zero. Getting the hydrogen ion concentration from this pH requires an assumption about the single ion activity of the hydrogen ion. The best estimate is probably the value of the mean ionic activity coefficient of the principal component at the same ionic strength as the sample. Alternatively, the procedure called bracketing can be used, as explained in frame 21.2. Choose two solutions, one on each side of the expected pH of the sample, to determine the actual, sometimes called the practical, slope factor. This compensates for any deficiencies in the electrodes, or less likely, in the meter. Before proceeding to part 2 of this program, make sure you have thoroughly understood the contents of part 1. In the second part of this program, starting with frame 22, I shall deal with the problems of assigning pH values to standard solutions and the choice of these. There is no reliable non-electrochemical method to determine pH defined in terms of activity. But we can overcome the problems of uncertainties due to liquid junction potentials if we use electrochemical cells without liquid junction, called cells without transport, or transference. As we shall see, in order to do this, we have first to estimate a single ion activity coefficient instead. This is a fundamental problem in electrochemistry. Neither single ion activities or liquid junction potentials can be experimentally determined. They are interlinked. If we make an assumption or calculation about one, then we get a corresponding value for the other. Frame 22 shows the cell with transport, cell 3, called the Harnid cell, named after Herbert Harnid of Yale, who did much of the pioneering work on the thermodynamics of electrochemical cells in the 1930s. I have chosen the example of potassium hydrogen phthalate, KHPH. Usually, with the hydrogen gas electrode, we use a platinized coating on the platinum electrode. However, in this case, we have to use a pallidized coating of lower catalytic activity. Otherwise, the benzene ring of phthalate is reduced chemically by the hydrogen gas. The reference electrode is silver-silver chloride, used directly in the buffer solutions, to which various small amounts of potassium chloride are added. From the Nernst equation, we derive equation 4 for a quantity closely related to pH, in terms of the cell potential difference E, the standard potential E naught, and the added potassium chloride molality M. After making a short extrapolation to eliminate the effect of the potassium chloride on the hydrogen ion activity of the buffer, we can obtain pH if we evaluate the single ion activity of the chloride ion present now in trace amount. We use the form of the Debye-Hückel equation with an assumed value for the ion size parameter, or distance of closest approach, of about 5 angstroms. This is the origin of the 1.5 factor in the denominator. This convention is named after the two people who suggested it, Roger Bates, who was responsible at the National Bureau of Standards in Washington, D.C., for much of the fundamental work on pH scales, and Ernest Guggenheim. The pH value thus calculated is called pH-RVS, where RVS stands for reference value standard, the name accorded to potassium hydrogen phthalate to distinguish it from the other substances. Measurements are repeated at other temperatures at 5-degree intervals over the range 0 to 95 degrees and fitted to a polynomial of the form shown at the bottom of frame 22. This procedure can be carried out for other suitable buffer solutions, such as the two other primary standards, PS, listed in frame 9, although we do not need palladized platinum electrodes. The requirements for substances for selection as primary standard buffers are listed in frame 23. The buffer capacity is the resistance to change in pH when the buffer solution is titrated with increments of acid or base. The buffer capacity is a maximum when pH is equal to pK. This means that the buffer solution is most effective when its pH is equal to the pK of the conjugate acid-base pair present in the solution. You will find more information about this in Appendix 1. The other terms in frame 23 are self-explanatory, with the exception of number 6, which I will now discuss in more detail. If we have made Harnid cell measurements on a number of primary buffer solutions, we can select one, say phthalate, the reference value standard, and measure the others against it in the operational cell, cell 1 or 2. That is RVS, phthalate, and X is a chosen primary standard, PS, in the operational cell 2. In this way, we can check the measurements are consistent. Calling these measurements from the operational cell PHOS, we can then subtract them from the values assigned by the Harnid cell measurements to the primary standard PHPS. This difference is the ordinate of the graph of frame 24 and is the residual liquid junction potential expressed in terms of pH. No, not in pH units, remember it does not have any. It is preferable to call it the conventional residual liquid junction potential because that draws attention to the fact that we've used a particular convention, the Bates-Guggenheim convention, to get these values. If we had chosen a different convention, the numerical values would be different. The left-hand ordinate on the figure of frame 24 refers to taking phthalate as the buffer for comparison, and the right-hand ordinate to selecting phosphate instead. There is very little difference between these, 0.003 in fact. If we stick to phthalate, phosphate, borate and tartrate, the conventional residual liquid junction potentials are small, and there is only a small inconsistency of the order of the experimental error in adopting this multi-standard pH scale. The situation is rather like a multi-point temperature scale based on melting points and transition temperatures of certain substances. At one time, this was how the practical temperature scale was defined, but it meant the small inconsistencies led to one getting different values for the temperature of a test sample depending on which choice was made for the temperature standard. If you look again at frame 24, you will see that the conventional residual liquid junction potentials are very much greater for some other buffer substances. For example, those based on substituted ammonia, such as trishydroxymethylaminomethane, or TRIS, or piperazine phosphate. Even buffers like carbonate bicarbonate, oxalate, and calcium hydroxide give large residual liquid junction potentials. One could argue that the Bates-Guggenheim convention is not appropriate for these solutions. Something of a dilemma arises. With a multipoint scale, we are introducing inconsistencies. It is equivalent to over-definition of the pH scale. How many primary standards should we choose? It seems sensible to choose only one standard solution to use in the Harnid cell. Farlate, the most satisfactory, is chosen, and the definition is completed by the slope of the line relating E of the operational cell with the hydrogen gas electrode to pH, being the theoretical slope factor K. The pHOS of operational standards are assigned from measurements of the operational cell with respect to pHRVS values. That is, S is RVS, farlate, and X is any of the chosen operational standards, including those chosen as primary standards, PS, in the operational cell too. Unfortunately, international experts could not agree on which of these two approaches, PHPS or PHOS, was the better, so a compromise was reached and adopted by the international body which looks after such matters, the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, IUPAC. So, both approaches are permitted, and consequently there are two sets of assigned values, PHPS and PHOS, for some buffers. The values are shown in appendices 2, 3, and 4. Since, as frame 24 shows, the conventional residual liquid junction potentials for farlate and phosphate, two rather different substances chemically, are close to zero, this suggests that the potential across the junction between farlate and concentrated potassium chloride is actually zero. The Henderson equation predicts about 3 millivolts. I prefer the pHOS approach. One uses it by matching X with OS as closely as possible. For example, with ammonia-type buffers, one would choose TRIS. Whereas the multi-standard approach is limited in the number of primary standard buffers to be chosen, inasmuch as the conventional residual liquid junction errors must be small, the operational OS standards are unlimited in their number, but criteria 1 to 5 and 7 of frame 23 still apply to their selection. For the great majority of pH measurements, the differences between the two approaches are insignificant, so the situation is not so unsatisfactory as it might seem. Appendix 5 gives, for reference, some useful data for buffer substances and solutions. All values in frame 24 and appendix 4 were derived from cells in which the liquid junctions were the free diffusion type formed within 1 mm capillary tubes. There are considerable differences when junctions are formed in other ways. This is shown by the data of frame 25. You should study this carefully, and there are several interesting conclusions to be drawn from it. Firstly, at the bottom of the first column, the determined slope using pHOS values has a smaller standard deviation than if pHPS values are used. This is because the residual liquid junction potential has already been included, and the slope is defined by the theoretical value. Secondly, ceramic plug junctions and fibre junctions are not as reproducible as ground glass sleeve junctions. Thirdly, there are some small millivolt errors of the glass electrode at the ends of the pH scale. You may be wondering why I have not so far discussed calculation of liquid junction potentials, since, as I said before, liquid junction potentials and single ion activities are interlinked. Calculating liquid junction potentials would lead us to single ion activities without using Debye-Huckel theory. The theoretical treatments of Henderson and Planck for liquid junction potentials are discussed in textbooks of electrochemistry. A derivation of the Henderson equation is given in Appendix 6. It refers to a particular form of mixing between the two terminal solutions, continuous mixture junctions or linear mixing, with a linear concentration gradient for each ion across the junction. This is far from the actual state of affairs for free diffusion junctions or for constrained junctions, where the form of mixing is ill-defined. The use of concentrated potassium chloride as the bridge solution in the operational cell is principally based on the Henderson equation derivation of Appendix 6, predicting that the liquid junction potential, EJ, will tend to zero if the concentration of potassium chloride is made as high as possible. However, as shown at the bottom of Appendix 7, when two liquid junctions are involved, as they are in the double operational cell, it is the ion mobilities in the two dilute solutions which are important to the residual liquid junction potential. This is why it's considered necessary to match the sample and standard closely in terms of composition and ionic strength. In fact, the Henderson equation does not predict directly even the sign of some of the values shown in frame 24. The situation is complex. There is no theoretical treatment yet for free diffusion junctions, although computer simulation studies have been carried out on simple three-ion junctions. This is therefore an unresolved problem in electrochemistry, which has been referred to as the Achilles heel of potentiometry. We do not completely understand what happens at liquid junctions. To a good approximation, a well-designed commercial liquid junction reference electrode does its job reasonably well, as the data of frame 25 show. 90% of troubleshooting problems in pH measurements in practice arise from difficulties with reference electrodes and insufficient regard for selection and care in their maintenance. Now I want to say something about the procedures for pH measurements. If one wants to measure the pH of samples in the pH range 2 to 10 and ionic strength 0.01 to 0.1 mole per litre, then there's unlikely to be any problem to plus or minus 0.02 in pH. If the solution is unbuffered, very dilute, concentrated, or outside the range of pH 2 to 10, then there may be considerable practical difficulties. Very few workers want, or need, to interpret pH in terms of hydrogen ion concentration rather than activity. But this is a specialized problem for those who do, which will not be discussed here. By way of illustration of the general problems, I will discuss four important examples. Acid rain is something of concern to everyone, not just to scientists, but determination of the pH of natural waters is not simple. The pH of acid rain samples is typically 2.5 to 4.0 and ionic strength 0.001 mole per litre. The solution is poorly buffered. Experimentally, potential differences tend to drift with time because the sample is not stable. Ions diffuse out of the glass membrane, potassium chloride leaks from the reference electrode, perturbing the sample and changing the EJ, which is anyway not the same as for the standard buffer. The results are not only imprecise, but inaccurate too. For these reasons, special dilute acid standard solutions have been suggested for pH measurements on acid rain waters. When river water flows into the sea, mixing occurs with the high salinity seawater in the estuary. Seawater typically has an ionic strength of 0.7 mole per litre, so water in river estuaries can be anything between 0.001 and 0.7 mole per litre. The upper value is way in excess of the suggested upper limit of 0.1 mole per litre for the application of the Bates-Guggenheim convention. Special seawater scales of pH have been proposed, in fact rather too many of them, to deal with this problem. The problems are compounded with estuarine water, where both ionic strength and residual liquid junction potential will be variable. pH profiling of estuaries with depth and tidal variations is important in river ecology and in the monitoring of discharges by industry. At the more sophisticated level of trying to understand the form of existence of certain substances called speciation studies, Precise and accurate pH measurements are needed, since 1 millivolt is equivalent to 0.017 in pH, is equivalent to 3.7% in concentration. The pH of whole blood or blood plasma is an important diagnostic quantity in medicine. When combined with carbon dioxide concentration, called PCO2, the bicarbonate concentration and acid-base status of the blood can be obtained. The pH of a normal patient's blood varies only narrowly in the range 7.3 to 7.4, and the clinician likes to report it to 3 decimal places. The ionic strength of blood is 0.16 mole per liter if one ignores charged proteins. Again, this exceeds the limit of the Bates-Guggenheim convention. Nevertheless, the 2 phosphate buffer standards, the second being the so-called blood phosphate buffer of pH 7.3 at 37 degrees, based on the Bates-Guggenheim convention, are used as the basis of the blood pH scale. Another problem is the unknown effect, thought to be significant by some people, of protein on the liquid junction potential. There is also the effect of potassium chloride on the red blood corpuscles, leading to crenation or bursting. What is required by the doctor is a reproducible scale of numbers, precision, not accuracy. The present procedure ensures this, but research physiologists and medical researchers are interested in iron fluxes across membranes and cells and, for example, studies of muscle function, for which activity gradient is the driving force. Modification of the approach to the medical pH scale may be necessary in the near future. Solutions which contain a proportion of non-aqueous solvent present special problems. Basically, there are 2 approaches. Aqueous standards can be used to give a reproducible scale of numbers which bear no relation to the hydrogen activity in that mixed solvent, particularly as liquid junction potentials are sizable. Alternatively, special scales and standards in that solvent mixture can be set up by Harnid cell measurements. Often, the liquid junction potential is dependent only on the composition of the solvent mixture in the pH range 3 to 8. Therefore, the 2 scales are offset by a constant amount. With a special scale set up, the correction factor can be calculated and applied so that aqueous standards can be used for convenience. An example is the PD scale for heavy water, which is important for heavy water-moderated nuclear reactors. The offset constant is plus 0.4, which is used to correct to the true PD scale the pH values measured with aqueous standards. If the proportion of non-aqueous solvent in the mixture is high, water can be abstracted from the gel layer of the glass electrode, leading to drifting potentials. The cartoon of frame 26 is a gentle reminder to end with that these problems with pH have to be kept in perspective in a practical situation such as the clinical one. Small differences of 0.01 to 0.02 are rarely of critical significance in any situation outside the research laboratory. In frame 27, I have given some references for further reading. Frame 28 has some exercises, the answers to which can be found right at the end of the workbook.